Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Get your advanced PhD in WOW from Floor and Decor. If you're a pro, you're already an expert in tile, wood, and stone. And with Floor and Decor's job site delivery, their free design services, and pro rewards that actually reward you, your business is set to grow from one client to the next. Floor and Decor isn't just a couple of aisles. It's an entire store designed to help your business boom. It's Floor and Decor.
Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. Well, in today's episode, we pick up where we left off last time with Mark Ripito. This part of the conversation with Mark, I took a bunch of questions that I got from Art of Manliness readers and took them right to him to get his input on it. Really great stuff, a lot of cool insights. So if you are into barbell training and want to get more into it, you're going to enjoy this session. So let's get started. I solicited Twitter for some questions from readers. I know a lot of our listeners are big fans of your work, and I had just some specific questions that people were curious when they found out I was going to be talking to Mark Ripito. So one question was, should you stretch before a workout? Because people hear different things on that. So what's your take on that?
I never, never stretch before I worked out. Now let me preface that by... Let me back up. I'll stretch my hamstrings out for about 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And stretching is one of these things that's been investigated fairly effectively in the literature. Stretching is an excellent way to reduce power production and reduce force production if you do it prior to squats and deadlifts and Olympic lifts. Here's the basic question. If you are flexible enough to do the range of motion of the full range of motion barbell exercises that comprise your training, and you're flexible enough to execute all of the movement patterns used in your sport, why do you need to stretch? You don't. It's a waste of time. It doesn't help soreness, doesn't alleviate soreness, it doesn't prevent soreness. Doesn't prevent headaches, it doesn't prevent hangovers, it doesn't do anything if you're already of sufficient flexibility. If you're not, obviously you need to stretch. You know, if you're a Muay Thai fighter and you can't kick high enough, well, you need to get to where you can. But if you're not, why stretch? It doesn't do anything positive, it's a waste of time, so no, we don't stretch.
All right. Yeah, I don't stretch before workouts.
Nah, either. I never have.
Never have.
I never have. I don't really know anybody that does. That's just that hasn't been influenced by the fashion of it.
Yeah.
You know, back in the 80s, all those posters. You know, here are these stretches you need to do every day. Why do you need to do them? You know, we tried that for a while. Nobody got any better. It didn't seem to help, and it added 15 minutes to the process.
Yep.
Not everybody's got an extra 15 minutes. And especially if it's not accomplishing anything, why in the hell waste the time on it?
Yep. All right, here's another question we got. How essential is squatting to speed development?
Well, that's an interesting question. Speed, in terms of a low 40 time, is an expression of power. It's an expression of the ability to express strength quickly. That's what power is. Power is force times distance over time. It's the instantaneous peak expression of force production. Peak velocity expression of force production. If you're fast, the only way to get faster really is to get stronger because of the math of the situation. F times D over T. And here's the basic contentious part of that discussion. The T part, the ability to express it quickly, the ability to explode, is almost exclusively controlled by the genetics of the athlete. We have a very, very reliable test for explosive capacity. It's called standing vertical jump. It's done on the standard is the Vertec device, which is a little frame that has veins that stick out from the side of them. You've probably seen one of those at a sports type gym. And you reach up and you touch the bottom of the vein array, and then you squat down without a step. Squat down, jump up as high as you can, and touch the veins again. And the distance between the bottom and the top of your hand reach during that movement is the standing vertical jump. Different distance between the flat-footed standing up-reached hand and the height of that hand at the top of the jump. It's not the same thing as a jump up onto a box. It's not the same thing as a running jump. It's not the same thing as dunking a basketball. It is the standing vertical jump and is extremely dependent on genetics. That's why it's useful as a test, because it reveals things that cannot be trained. In other words, a person with a standing vertical jump of 12 inches is never going to have a standing vertical jump of even 18 inches. And I understand all the people on the internet that advertise that they got their vertical jump from 18 to 36. That's what we call bull. And doesn't occur, because the standing vertical jump in the best strength and conditioning programs is improvable by 20 to 25%. There are outliers. But in general, if a person comes into an effective strength program as an athlete with a 27, 28-inch vertical jump, if the coach could get him up to 30, that's really good. But nobody with an 18 is ever going to have a 36. That's why we use the test, because it tells us the genetics of the person we're dealing with and their athletic potential. That's why it's used in the combine. Training for the standing vertical jump test misses the point. We're trying to identify genetics here. And the genetics of explosion are, you know, I'm not very explosive. I didn't need to be explosive to be strong. But in order that the equation F times D over T have a more positive value, the only thing you can manipulate is the force production variable. In other words, strength, to the extent possible, improves a vertical. It also improves a 40-yard dash time. But a person with a 6'2", 40, you know, is probably not ever going to see a 5 because of the genetic nature of explosion. And I hate to tell everybody that, but that's one of those... It's just one of them deals. It's kind of not what we want it to be, but is nonetheless.
So it can help to an extent to your genetics.
To the extent you can help, you get stronger.
Yeah.
Okay. I hate to be repetitive, but
sure. Yeah. Just to clarify that.
It's stronger is better.
Okay. All right. So here's another question we had related to squatting. What if you have bad knees? Should you still squat?
Oh, what do you mean by a bad knee?
That's the million. He didn't really.
A bad knee can come in three or four different forms.
I got crepitus into my right knee. Can I still squat heavy?
Well, you have been.
Yeah.
You know, crepitus doesn't mean anything except your knees are noisy. A lot of people have noisy knees.
Okay.
I've trained people that I couldn't stand to be there on the platform because the noise made me sick. It's got that tendon sound, but they're fine. You know, it didn't hurt. It's just the way their knees sounded. Now, if that sound is accompanied by pain, that's probably indicative of a problem we need to investigate. But it's been my experience that the only people that really, honestly don't need to be squatting are people whose knees are bone on bone. If your meniscus is gone, you might as well just go ahead and make up your mind that you're going to get the knee replacement so that you can get back to your training. A bone on bone, an absence of a meniscus, I don't think a person needs to be squatting if they're, but I know people that do it, but I don't recommend that. If you've got some tendonitis in your knees, 99% of the time you produced it with your training. You're doing something wrong. Correct technique, once again, is critical. Remember, the squat is a hips movement, not a knees movement. Most people have an idea in their mind, a picture in their mind of a front squat, which is, in fact, the knees movement. But our squat, the one we use, is a hips movement. Most of the stress is on the hips, not on the knees. So if you're allowing your knees to creep into the squat when they shouldn't be, that has the potential to cause some knee pain, some tendonitis. It won't destroy your meniscus. It won't destroy your knee. It just makes things unpleasant. But again, it's usually a technique issue.
Okay. All right, here's another question we had from someone. Does the one rep max really mean anything? And if so, how do you safely
measure? Not unless you're at a powerlifting meet.
Yeah.
We never test for a one rep max.
Okay.
Unless we're at a meet. We just don't do it because it doesn't tell us anything we need to know. This is another argument I have with a conventional approach to strength and conditioning. What everybody wants to do is bring a novice into the gym, test them on a one rep max the first day, and then base a whole month's worth of programming on that one rep max. Well, here's the problem with that. A one rep max for a novice doesn't tell you anything about the novice. I show some kid how to do a squat, first day he's done the squat, and I work him up to a one rep max. A, what's it going to look like? Is it going to be a correct squat? Yeah. Well, no, it's not going to be a correct squat because he just learned how to do the damn thing. Okay, and if you run him up to as heavy a weight as he can do, what's going to happen to his technique? All that instruction goes down the toilet, doesn't it? Because you just allowed him to do something with incorrect technique. Second, he is a person that has learned the movement today, going to be able to accurately display his one rep max strength on that movement. But with neurological inefficiency and all the other constraints to the display of one rep max, of maximum absolute strength. No, he can't. Once again, bad data. But here's probably the most important consideration. If I have a person that has never trained before, go up to a one rep max squat, even if I manage to have him do it correctly, what is the one rep max effort going to do to the guy? It's going to make him stronger, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's going to function as an adaptive stress. In other words, 48 hours later, the guy is stronger than he was when you tested him 2 days ago. And now your data is wrong. So there's three or four lines of reasoning that mitigate against the use of the one rep max. It doesn't tell you anything. And what we're going to do anyway is we're going to go up to sets of five. We're going to find out what he can do for sets of five. And then the next workout, we're going to come in and go up 5 pounds. We don't care what his one rep max is. That's not the way we train. We're going to train the one rep max, so we don't need the data.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.